Welcome to Talk Safety to Me, a podcast from the North Dakota Safety Council, where we discuss safety at home, in the workplace, and in our communities. Recorded at the Radio Access Studio in Bismarck, North Dakota, you can find Talk Safety to Me on 102.5 FM or online at radioaccess.org or ndsc.org.
Hello, I'm Chuck Claremont. I'm the CEO of the North Dakota Safety Council, and more relevant to you, I'm the host of the Talk Safety to Me, the North Dakota Safety Council podcast. We also have our senior marketing and communications manager, Tia Streeter. She's producing. She's sitting alongside me today. We actually have her mic working today, so you might even hear her a little bit.
Yeah, last time. We'll see if I can get a question.
I didn't pay anybody any extra so I could talk more. My voice is tender today, so I'm going to let Tia and Art do most of the talking. And today, speaking of Art, we got Art Thompson. Art Thompson's the director of Workforce Safety and Insurance. Just kind of started that role. And we appreciate you joining us. First time I got a chance to meet you in person. I've heard your voice over the phone. When people hear your voice, they're going to say, this guy's a TV and radio guy.
Well, thanks, Chuck. Thanks, Tia, for having me on here. And you're correct. Back in the day, many, many years ago, I was a television news reporter in the Fargo market and then worked my way into public relations and ultimately moved to Bismarck and was the public information officer for WSI from 2000 to 2002 before heading my career in another direction in the private sector. And fast forward to November 1st of 2022, I was named the new director for WSI. So amazing experience to come back to that agency and work with just a tremendous amount of wonderful people and caring about and really passionate about what they do.
And replacing a legend in Brian Klipbol. Brian's been so great for the state of North Dakota, whether it's the Highway Patrol, whether it was job service at the end of his career. I mean, for you to step in his shoes, you got a little bit to live up to.
That is very true. Brian has just been a tremendous mentor to me. Known him over the years, and when I was appointed by Governor Burgum in October, I spent several hours with Brian up until I took over, and it was really nice that I had Brian with us at WSI for 2 months. He retired on December 31st, so having him there to be able to bounce ideas off of and answer questions and just be a really strong resource for me was something that really helped with this transition.
And I would imagine, knowing Brian, that he's not just done. His phone's turned off. He's still, if you need to call him, you have his number. I'm sure he'll take care of you.
Absolutely. I called him the other night. I have been texting him about his retirement and if he's getting bored. And Brian has now had this perma-grin on his face every time I see him about how wonderful retirement is. And really, after 40-some years of service to the state of North Dakota, it's well-deserved. But he misses the people, and he's always a great resource, so it's always fun to pick up the phone and bounce a few more ideas off him. He's just a tremendous guy, and I feel really blessed to walk into an agency that he put his stamp on and really set the strategic direction, set the mission for the employees, for our team members, created a wonderful culture there. And it's really interesting. I've had a number of conversations with lawmakers, and WSI over the years has not always been the stable agency that it is. And that's, you know, I won't go into all the details on that, but, you know, mid-90s, we were underfunded, and it looked like the agency could go under. And a lot of legislative changes, a lot of hard work, a lot of tough decisions. And one of the legislators, Jerry Klein, Senator Klein, told me when I was appointed, he said, "We've come a long ways." And he said, "You're following a legend. My advice to you is, don't screw it up." So, I mean, with advice like that, how can I go wrong? Yeah. No, it's a great experience. And just the partnerships that we have developed, too, and being here with the North Dakota Safety Council and Chuck, you and Tia, and just being able to talk. And you've been a great partner with us, and we share the same vision of keeping workers in North Dakota safe and providing training for them and for their employers. You know, our mission is to care for injured workers, and the best way to do that is to not let them get injured in the first place. Right. So,
prevention,
absolutely.
Preventing injury. That's our mission. So, our mission hopefully can help your mission as well. And, you know, you talk about that time back in the 90s, and we were fortunate enough to have somebody on our board that was a huge part of that, Pat Traynor. He was a director for workforce safety back in the day, and Pat's been just an amazing influence to me and a mentor to me as I started. He was on the board of directors, so you know, I know that he was very influential back in the day, because I think when he started, it was underfunded, and by the time Pat left his tenure, they had turned things around.
Absolutely. Pat and the team that was in place at the time, working with the legislature, working with the governor's office, yep, working with the business community, working with other associations, trying to figure this thing out and how we were going to make it work. There were a lot of long hours, a lot of tough decisions, but credit to the leadership of several people, and I've known Pat over the years as well. Great guy, and really did a great job of turning that around.
So Workforce Safety's had a strong history of UND leaders with Pat, with Brian. My understanding is, not that you're not a UND guy, but you go to the Bison games every weekend with your son Aiden.
Absolutely, absolutely. So that was a little spar that Brian and I had. He was cleaning out his office when I was moving in, and he had some UND paraphernalia that he wanted to leave behind. And I said, you know, I appreciate the gesture, but I just can't take that in good faith. And so replaced his UND stickers with, you know, my Bison helmets and different things like that. So people give me a bad time because I'm actually a Morehead State Dragon.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I went there for their broadcast and their television broadcast program. Morehead's football program wasn't the most stellar thing, so we would always sneak over to Fargo and go to Bison games, and I've followed the Bison ever since. And been to Frisco a couple times, and I have a 14-year-old son, and he's a football fanatic too,
yeah,
so it's great to cruise over and catch home games and enjoy life a little bit. And
yeah, I heard your son was a growing young man, a position to be playing football in the future?
Well, we certainly hope so. It's interesting. He's going to be turn 14 next week. 6'1", 240 with a size 15 shoe. So if anybody out there listening would like to pass the hat for my grocery bill, I would greatly appreciate it. The kid's always hungry, but he plays football up at Horizon, and then he'll be going to Century next year. So their starting line in his eighth grade football team this year had no linemen under 200 pounds. So I know Century rebounded their season this year and ended up making it to the state championship. In a couple years, they're going to have some big boys up front again and hopefully return that program.
They seem to never be at a loss for linemen. As a sports guy, it's like they always have keep replacing their linemen. And as a former lineman, that is such an important part.
There you go.
An integral part of any team is the lineman.
Absolutely. It starts right there. So
yeah. Not in high school, I wasn't there, but in college, I got moved to line, and so the rest is history. I still get crap from my friends about, especially the ones that stayed at tight end. Every time I see him, he asks me how many catches I had in my college career. And I said, you're just lucky I didn't play ahead of you, because you'd had none. So I said, I'm the one who lifted and put on weight over the summer.
You
didn't. So they moved me to line.
Absolutely.
So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. One thing about workforce safety is you mentioned some of the history with workforce safety, but one of the things too is it's kind of misunderstood by the people at home. And what you said your mission's not preventing injuries, but it's supporting the worker when they're injured. Give the listeners a little bit of a better understanding for workforce safety, exactly what you do.
Certainly. So workforce safety and insurance, we were constitutionally founded back in 1919. Along the same year as the State Bank of North Dakota, the State Mill and Elevator. Our mission is charged with providing coverage for workers when they're injured on a job. We collect premiums from North Dakota employers, and those premiums are calculated based on 141 different employment categories that all have a different level of risk associated with them. If a worker sustains a workplace injury, they file a claim with us. We cover 100% of the medical cost for treatment for that injured employee. And then we also, if they're unable to return to work for a limited amount of time, we'll do wage loss benefits. We have programs we do vocational rehab. We have a number of different programs that provide scholarships if somebody can't go back into the employment that they were in and they need to be retrained. We will cover that. In the cases where we have severe injuries, there's disability benefits that carry through until the person reaches Social Security age. So basically, our charge is to care for injured workers. With that, I mentioned earlier that we do try to prevent those as well. And so we have loss control agents that work in the state. They go out, they do safety assessments. We have ergonomic grants that employers can apply for. We have our STEP grants, which the Safety Council has been a longtime recipient of those. And, you know, we want to try to promote working safe in any number of ways that we can. And obviously we can't do it all ourselves. Yeah. And so we look for partners such as the Safety Council. And with your event coming up here the end of February, we'll pitch that a little bit. WSI is proud that our STEP grant that was provided to the Safety Council helps to fund that that conference that's coming up. And what, close to 900 people registered or on average that attend that. That's really a great use of our resources. Number of wonderful topics that people can come in, and we're just really proud to be part of that.
Yeah, great transition. Appreciate that. So you're talking about the Safety and Health Conference. It's our 50th annual, by the way, so it's an exciting time for us. And sometimes I feel like it's more exciting for us than maybe for somebody else.
It definitely is. I was having that conversation the other day. I said, we're so excited about the 50th, you know, because it means something to us. We need to get everybody else on that same path.
And we're getting some registrations coming in. People always seem to wait till the last minute, and it's early bird registration, just kind of passed it. So I think we're past the 700 mark now and moving closer. And by the time we're all done, we're hoping to have over 900. But it is such a great partnership we have with Workforce Safety because the money we get from the STEP grant to provide scholarships to attendees. So when you think about what we're providing, I think it ends up being a net around $400 or something around that.
Right about that. I think like 405 or something.
Right. So to get 3 days of training, to get fed breakfast and lunch and breaks, get three keynotes. I mean, what a unbelievable great use of individuals' funds for their 400, but also they get another couple hundred dollars per person as a scholarship. Just an amazing thing in North Dakota that hopefully we can get more people utilizing that, because it's probably one of the best and most cost-effective ways for training.
Absolutely, and that's really what we look for in these partnerships and when you apply for the grant programs. And I'll give a pitch to our grant programs. If anybody's interested in seeing what it would take to qualify for one of our ergo grants or the ergonomic grants, if you want to be part of the safety training and education program, the STEP grants, I would encourage you to go out to workforcesafety.com, our website. All of the information is out there. There's a lot of it to go through. I won't go through all the details here on the podcast, but I do want to put a commercial out there that we want to partner. We have funds available. Give it a look. It doesn't cost you anything to apply. And also our loss control specialist would love to come out and work with you. I think one of the misconceptions that people might have is, because we're a branch of the government, we are a state agency, we're not the enforcer. We're not OSHA, we're not MSHA. We want to be your partner. Yep. So a lot of times companies will call us and they know they have an OSHA inspection coming up. One of our loss control specialists can go out and do a pre-walkthrough and say, hey, you're going to want to fix this, or did you notice this? And we want to work with you to develop a program that's specific to your business and identify hazards that could injure your employees and try to be as proactive as possible. So a lot of great opportunities out there. But with the grant programs, go to workforcesafety.com. There's a link to it. All of the applications are there. It's a real simple process, so certainly check it out.
Yeah, I know for us it's it's a thorough process. It's simple, but it's thorough, where our application is, we've been doing it for a number of years now, so it's a lot easier. But I mean, it's good. You're not just giving the money away just because you're signing a piece of paper and saying giving us money. And we actually at the Safety Council, we take advantage of your ergonomic grant. I just talked to one of our board members, Jeannie DeCray, and we got a bunch of new employees, so we're going to have to utilize some more funding for that as well. But the part to me you touched on the people you have, your loss prevention specialists, and this isn't part of the script, but I think it's so important to talk about this.
You're allowed to go off.
Thank you. I do that a lot, I know. What I know is going to make your job easier is you've got such awesome employees, and we've been working with people like Nick Jolliffe and Jane Wick and Jim Ash, and I could go down the list and name every one of your loss prevention specialists. We get a chance to see them all at the Safety and Health Conference, and it's such a great group, a knowledgeable group of people that we are blessed to be able to work with groups like that.
No, absolutely, and I can't say enough about the team that I've inherited from our loss control to our claims analysts to our policyholder services. I mean, all down the line, everybody at WSI, when I testified earlier this week on our appropriations bill, and, you know, I mentioned that right now I feel like we have the A-team. I mean, there's not one person that on our team that's a weak link. Everybody is so committed and caring and detailed about what they do. When you talk about our loss control specialists, they eat, breathe, and sleep safety. This is a lifelong passion of theirs, and injury prevention is something that they want to do, and they take great pride in. And working with groups like yours and other employers that go through our safety discount programs where they can implement some things, receive a premium discount at the end of the year if they complete or participate in that program, I'm proud to sit here and tell you that over the last decade, injury rates in North Dakota coming into our office have declined by over 30%.
It's amazing.
I mean, it's amazing. And it's not all us. It's the extensions that we have and getting people into that mindset that, yes, I might work in a hazardous industry, but it doesn't have to be dangerous. Let's figure out how we can make this safer. Let's figure out how we can do things right. Let's figure out how we can quit injuring people. And we're seeing that, and a 30% decrease over the last decade. It's huge.
It is, and I know that we get a chance to work with a lot of your loss prevention specialists because as they're working with your clients, if there's an opportunity for them for safety training for something that us or another member of the private industry has, whether it's a referral or a name or whatever, it's a great relationship that I think there's a trust between both sides. You trust our trainers that you know that we're nothing but top-notch, and it's great for us to work with your loss prevention specialists because, I mean, they're good people.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's the part of it that you talk to these guys, you think of the guys down the list, and I mean, just every single one of them are—they're just good people, like you said. They're A team.
Yep, and I'm proud to represent them, and I'm proud to talk about them because what they do is extremely important, and the caring, the compassion, and I think you know the general public sometimes doesn't see that side of our business. But it's a tough business. When you look at having to deal with an injured worker that comes in and you're dealing with injuries or dismemberments or, you know, unfortunately sometimes there's workplace fatalities. I mean, our people take that hard. I mean, it is a tough thing to deal with. And so any step that we can take in financing through safety grants and other programs that we have to start reducing and keep that injury trend of reducing injuries going, it's huge. And so we just appreciate anybody that's interested in stepping up the safety game. We want to have a conversation with you. We want to work with you. And if you're unsure where to start, let's go to the Safety Council conference coming up here because you're going to get a lot of resources and a lot of ideas. And it's right here in Bismarck. And, you know, it's a great place to figure out how do we get started.
Yeah, it's just we're so proud of it in our 50th year, as we mentioned, that hopefully 900 to 1,000 attendees, exhibitors, mm-hmm. 150-plus exhibitors, 90-plus sessions.
Yep.
And so, I mean, it's just so many things going on with conference. And the beauty of that, too, is not only are you providing scholarships, but you're also going to be there. You're going to represent Workforce Safety as an exhibitor. And there's a number of sessions that some of your top-notch, not just your loss prevention people, but other guys within and ladies within mm-hmm. it's just a generic term.
I gotcha. Got me.
I was looking over at Tia to see if she was going to reach over and, you know, slap you upside the head here and remind you.
Yeah. So, I mean, other people in your organization that teach those classes, and every year you have 30 to 40 to 50 people in them. And it's just a great chance for those, some of the drill downs, even the Workforce Safety 101 classes that every year, those new people that are transient to the safety industry, that they can learn and get a chance to meet the people behind the scenes.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're so proud to get out and educate. That's a big component of what we do. And one of the things that, you know, with the 101, The earlier that we can find out about an injury, the better it is for everybody involved with the injured worker, with the employer, and with our team, because we can start putting those steps together to get that person, you know, not only the medical treatment that they need to get them healed up, but to work with the employer and try to get them back into the workforce as quickly as possible, whether that's through, you know, some job restrictions they might have, finding some light duty and things like that, but coming up with a game plan so that that person's not just sitting at home for 6 weeks recovering. Let's get them back in. Let's get them implemented. Let's, you know, get them being productive again within their company. And so the quicker you involve us, the better it is for everybody. And it also helps to speed up the time that it takes for that person to get the medical care they need, get fixed up, get healed up, and then get back into their job. And right now with the labor shortage, nobody can afford to have a current employee sitting on the sidelines dealing with an injury for an extended period of time. So,
well, bottom line, workforce safety, they're the good guys.
We like to think so. And, you know, it's interesting. A lot of times you hear from people that don't like a decision that we made.
Right.
And the one thing that I'd like to point out is that WSI just doesn't arbitrarily apply the rules.
Right.
We're a state entity. All of our policies, all of our payments, they're spelled out in statute. And we're at the legislature right now. There's been a number of concerns or ideas brought forward on maybe changing some of our statutes. And so we're working through those, and that's really the process that we go through. And so you know, it's like anything in life. Sometimes the squeaky wheel gets all the attention. I can tell you that it does my heart really good when we get emails, we get letters from people that we've helped, and they say, oh, I've heard all these bad things about WSI, and this was going to be a nightmare, but it was nothing but a great experience. My claims analyst, she was on top of it. He did this or that, and we just are so appreciative of how you conducted yourselves. And those are the things that that, you know, I love to hear that.
Yeah. Too many times you hear the negatives and not enough of those positives. But I think we all know, especially the ones of us that have worked with workforce safety so long, we know the positives. I got a couple family members that I know work there. My sister-in-law, Karen Jensen, and her husband, Gary Lear.
Oh, absolutely.
Karen Jensen Lear, I should say.
Karen Jensen Lear, yes. And then Gary,
and
you
Gary
bet.
Lear. So they've been there a long, long time. So I got a lot of friends that have been workforce safety, so we appreciate everything you guys do. And so, speaking of our conference, I don't want to get away from that because we're going to throw you in the deep end of the pool at our conference.
Absolutely, yeah. I think I was invited probably the second day on the job. I had an email from you guys.
Well, we waited till you started before we sent you the email. Sure. We already had identified you.
It was a good welcome message.
Yeah, I was, okay, I'm day two. Sure, I'll be on a stage in front of 900 people or whatever the number is going to be. And
yeah, we hope that's it. So it's an OSHA panel discussion, and you're with some high-level people. Jennifer from, how can I forget her last name? Jennifer
Rouse.
Yes, thank you. She's never in the history of the safety conference that we've ever had somebody at her level. She's head of Region 8. Mm-hmm. So she's
with OSHA.
OSHA, right. So she'll be out here, and Scott Overson, obviously, speaking of voices, there'll be some deep voices between
and
me. And Jennifer's
or Jennifer in
put
that
some,
group, yeah.
You know,
she's going to put some bass in her voice.
Some bass in her voice, exactly. And then we have another kind of an industry expert, Bill Spreeman, I think this will be part of it as well. And so I think there's just some great topics as we've been trying to plan for that. And you know, hopefully the participation of the audience, too. We talk about safety culture. That's one of the topics that we're looking at. And that's a piece that is such a big deal nowadays in safety culture, that when you talk about getting the labor force, if you don't have a good safety culture, it's difficult to keep people. And that's going to be one of the conversations we have during that OSHA panel discussion.
Absolutely. And you know, it's interesting. When I worked at WSI for back in 2000 through 2002, I was the public information officer. I was promoting our safety programs. I didn't really fully comprehend the magnitude and why it was so important. After I left and I took a couple of other career turns in my career, and I ended up out in the field managing operations and running concrete production operations. And then I started paying for WSI coverage and all these other things, and realizing that you know, we need to make sure we're taking care of our employees. That's really when it hit me on how important it was. And I give this example that when I was, running the ready mix operation, and CDL drivers, if anybody out there doesn't know, they're in extremely short supply, yeah. Right? And so we had a driver that unfortunately tripped on a job site, banged up his knee, was going to be out for about 6 months. Or 6 weeks, excuse me. So when I was looking at it, not only now do we have an employee who's injured and we're trying to take care of him and get him treated as quickly as possible, and we found some light duty to bring him back, but he couldn't drive his truck. So now I have a $200,000 piece of equipment that's basically a paperweight in my yard. On average, they take out 6 loads a day at $1,000, just say revenue per load, 6 days a week times 6 weeks. That's huge money to a business. So when people say, well, I'm just a small business, or I don't have time, I can't afford to invest in safety, look at what one injury can do to your bottom line. And that's taking away the human factor. There isn't anybody that wants right. to injure an employee or see somebody get hurt, or at least I hope not, right? I mean,
right.
Human nature, we want to make sure everybody succeeds and they go home the same way that they came to work. But I challenge anybody to look at your business, and whether you're a restaurant owner or you run a small office, what does one person out of your team cost you in lost production, lost revenues, things like that? And then tell me that you can't afford to invest in safety. I don't buy it.
Yeah, I don't buy it either. And you mentioned statistics, and my background's finance and accounting, so I love statistics you're talking about. Sometimes people need to hear the dollar value, the finance side of things. Unfortunately, it truly shouldn't mask the personal side, because that's the most important.
Absolutely.
But when we think of statistics, one of the things that we look at claims, and I was looking at this, that Tia put this together, and you talk about an average of 775 claims for workers 19 and younger per year. That young age and first year on the job, what an important time in terms of training and education that workers need to, the companies need to have.
Absolutely. It is critical. And we have a program. We have information on our website. It's the Young Worker Program, so that people can go out and they can take advantage and just look through some basic ideas. But when you talk about building a culture, and maybe you have a seasoned team, and all of a sudden you come in and you're like, okay, we're going to take safety seriously and we're going to implement all these things, you're going to get pushback initially. And you need to keep following through with that. But when a younger worker comes in and you have that opportunity to train them right from the get-go that mm-hmm. this is what's expected, you have to have your PPE on if you want to work here. These are the basic requirements, and try to build that right from day one. The other thing is really paying attention to that young worker or the first-year employee. And right now I know, because I lived it out in operations. Through the oil boom. I mean, sometimes you were happy just to find a body to put yeah. in a position, and that's a dangerous thing, because if they're not fully trained, if they're not understanding of all of your safety procedures and what your expectations are and how your operations work, they could hurt themselves or they could hurt other people. And so really focusing in on new employees, young employees, and teaching them right, and it takes time. But unfortunately, that's something that you have to invest in those people right from the get-go. And it's not just a quick one-hour safety briefing and kick them loose. Yeah. This is a constant thing that has to be embedded into your everyday operations. And then it starts to become second nature, and they start policing themselves and saying, hey, you forgot your hard hat, go put it on, or where's your safety glasses? I love to see that happening with my teams. Mm-hmm. When they started holding each other accountable, that's when you know you really have a strong safety culture.
I think, true, I'm going to chime in on this, that...
You don't get to?
I let you go off script. You got to give me a minute.
Sorry.
I was trying to figure out where we were on the strip.
Yeah, we make things up along the way. I think people feel valued, too, when you really have a great safety culture. Because when they feel safe on the job, they feel valued as an employee. And that's such an important thing that we can give our people. Because especially when we talk about a labor shortage, if people don't feel valued at their job, we're just going to be turning over more people. And so I think that's such a great lesson. And the more we can get that out, that first year and really having that culture in place is where we need to be.
It's huge. And to piggyback on that, just look at the retention. You know, mm-hmm. that's equally as important as recruiting right now. keeping your folks on the job and making them feel valued, making them feel part of the organization, and showing that you care. I don't want to hurt you. Like,
yep.
These rules aren't in here just because I feel like, you know, being a jerk or a bad boss. It's I want to protect you, and this is why we're doing these things. And I think when people feel that and they know that you care, they tend to stay. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is they can become some of your best recruiters versus you spending money on advertising and going to job fairs and different things like that. If your team really feels valued and appreciated and cared for, they're going to tell other people, hey, if you're looking for a job, come work with us. And that's really another side benefit of having a strong safety culture, strong program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's about, bottom line, it's about getting people home safe. And it's preventing the injuries and whatever so they can go home safe to their families. And we are talking the same tune. And, you know, you mentioned a lot of things. You mentioned the Young Worker Program, which I wasn't aware of, the ergonomics program, the STEP grant, the safety incentive program. Are there any other opportunities that workforce safety might offer that maybe people don't know?
Certainly. We have scholarship programs available for, you know, the surviving spouses or dependent children of somebody that sustains a workplace fatality. We have retraining programs for those employees that aren't able to go back into the position that they were in. And with that, we have a preferred worker program. So this is something that's really beneficial, I think, to employers and particularly those looking for employees right now that not many people know about. So say we have an employee that's injured. They can't go back to the profession that they were working in when they sustained an injury. WSI will invest in them and take them back to school, get them a certificate, get them a two-year degree, something along those lines, whatever they're interested in and whatever their restrictions allow them to do. And then if you are an employer and you're able to hire someone that is in our preferred worker program, WSI will cover that employee's workers' compensation premiums for 3 years. We will provide up to half of their weekly wage as an incentive to get those people, not those people, but a person in that preferred worker program mm-hmm. back into the workforce. And we do that for up to 3 years as a way to say if this, you know, their prior claim doesn't fall on your experience rating, we have retrained them. We're going to help cover some of their wages to make it easier for you to bring them in and have them as an employee. We're going to cover their WSI premiums for up to 3 years. It's a great program.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, we want to, our first and foremost goal is to care for injured workers, get them treated, get them proper medical care, get them back to their original employer. If they can't, we have a number of programs to retrain them. And then through this preferred worker program, employers can reach out and see the type of talent that we have and try to find a place for them. And we're going to help get that put together. So,
love that.
No doubt. Great. There's so many great things that and there's more information out there than we would have time to even talk about.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
You mentioned the website. I've gone to your website, and it's pretty comprehensive.
That it is. And, you know, if there's things on the website that you have more questions about, you want to talk to somebody, give us a call.
Yeah.
We would love to talk to you about the various programs and how we can be a partner, how you might take advantage of the Preferred Worker Program, what you could learn about the Young Worker Program, the training materials that we have, any of our grant programs. I mean, we want to be a resource, and that's why we're here.
Well, 2 months into it?
Yeah, you're killing it.
You're killing it. You sound like you've been there your whole life.
Absolutely.
You know, I have a great team. They prep me really, really well, and it's something that I'm just so proud of, that my career has brought me full circle, yeah. And I can come back and be in this leadership role and represent. You know, we have 240-some hardworking men and women that are just caring, diligent, passionate about what they do, and that provides energy for me. Every morning when I wake up, I can't wait to get to the office. And I can tell you that through my career, that wasn't always the case. Mm-hmm. And it's really about the culture and the team and the mission and what we're doing, and I think we're doing it well. Obviously, people will you know, nitpick at certain things. Sure. But for the vast majority, our customer satisfaction surveys are strong. Our injured worker surveys are strong. Our partnerships with medical providers are strong. We do annual surveys on a scale of 1 to 5, and we're in the low to, you know, right around 4 to low 4s on all three of those groups. And then the state does employee engagement surveys. And I'm proud to say that WSI, out of a cabinet agency with more than 100 employees, we tied for the best score with job service as the most engaged employees. And that, I mean, that says a lot to me. So our turnover is extremely low.
Yep.
And that says a lot, too. Some of those names you mentioned, they were who I worked with 20 years ago.
Right.
And they're still there. And that's another reason that we have this wonderful seasoned team that knows how things work and what we do. And it just makes me extremely, extremely proud to sit here today as the director of that agency.
Well, we're talking to Art Thompson, the director of Workforce Safety and Insurance. And so we want to have a little fun, too. It's a lot of serious topics and super important to have conversations on. But we have a little thing at the end, this little would you rather quiz. But before I get to that, you know, some insight I got from you on some things. I mean, a Washburn Cardinal.
Absolutely. Washburn Cardinal, hometown, love the Cardinals, class of 94. My dad was the McLean County Sheriff. I grew up in the actual McLean County Jail. Before they built the new one.
Okay, not so, in the jail, inside the jail.
No, we were our residence was connected to the jail.
Wow.
And so that might explain a lot about me. Before they built the new facility, that's where I grew up. Tremendous respect for law enforcement. But growing up in that environment, I knew that I did not want to do that as a career. Just
sometimes you know.
Sometimes, yeah, absolutely.
So I get the Washburn, the fishing. I know you're a big avid fisherman up at Lake Sakakawea, family cabin. But how do you get to be a Seattle Seahawk fan?
Oh, that's a great question. So growing up, my dad was a diehard Vikings fan. And so when I was young, I was a Vikings fan. In about second grade, he was taking me to my first professional football game at the Metrodome, and it was Minnesota versus Seattle. So my great uncle lived in Seattle, was a commercial fisherman, just like you see on Deadliest Catch and things like that. Great guy, was a season ticket holder to the Huskies, the Seahawks, the Mariners. I mean, all the Seattle sports scene. So to get at my dad for the week leading up to the game, he would send me stuff.
Sure.
So I got a Dave Craig jersey, I got a ball hat, you know, a Seahawks hat. I had all this stuff. And so I go to the game, and I'm decked out in Seattle wear, and we're in the Metrodome. Seattle comes back in the fourth quarter, and they score 2 touchdowns to beat Minnesota. So all the way back from Minneapolis to Washburn, you know, I'm a snot-nosed, like, second-grade kid. Like, hey, Dad, who won the game? Who won the game? Like, I'm surprised he didn't leave me on the side of the road. Fast forward to the next weekend, and this is before DirecTV and NFL tickets, so Seattle wasn't a market game that we got all the time. So we're back watching the Vikings. And I start cheering for the Vikings, and my dad looked at me and he said, nope. He said, you got to pick. He said, I take you to a game, they're my team, our team, and you're a Seahawks fan last week, and now you're a Vikings fan. What are you? And I said, well, I guess I'm a Seattle fan. And I followed him ever since.
Wow.
So I've been fortunate to go out to Seattle quite a few times for games, and they've had a good run.
Yep.
You know, they did a lot better this year than I thought they would with Geno Smith at the helm. But I could sit here and talk Seahawks football with you, or just football in general, fishing, whatever. That's how that story came about. So
well, it's a great story. Cool memory.
So two things. You said football. You said fishing. So here's our quiz. It's called Talk Safety to Me, Would You Rather Quiz.
Okay.
You ready?
I guess I have to be.
Okay. So would you rather never watch a football game, whether it's the Bison, whether it's the Seattle Seahawks, or would you never go fishing again?
Ooh. Man, that's tough because those are two things that my son and I really bond over. And I'm an avid fisherman. My son, who loves football, loves fishing even more. I mean, the kid, anytime he gets $5 in his pocket, we have to go to Shields to buy the latest and greatest lure. So he's always going to be broke. And, you know, that's always – that's awesome. Man, I would have to say fishing. I just love being outside. I love being on the water. It's something I've grown up with. We had a family cabin from the time I was little, and I've been fortunate to take that over. And so being on the water in the summertime is fantastic. Being on the ice in the wintertime, that's fun too. But man, you're like, well, this is a tough thing. But I'll go with fishing.
All right, I like that. The last thing I got to do too is we like to make this a family show too. You talked a lot about your son Aiden. I know you have a successful daughter in terms of beauty pageants. Alexis, is she 15?
Yeah, she's a 15-year-old, a freshman at Century, and she is she's my theater and arts, and she's in dance, and she's in choir, and she was in Sleepy Hollow production last summer. Absolutely excels at that. She's going to be in speech. She wants to be an attorney when she gets older.
Wow.
When I have conversations with her, I can't get by with, because I'm your dad, and I said so. I mean, she has, like, detailed questions, and
sure.
I feel like I'm being cross-examined all the time, but two wonderful, wonderful, great kids that
awesome.
Both different in their own ways, and I'm fortunate that they still like each other for the most part. Yep. They get on each other's nerves, but no, fantastic. Cool. Yep. So,
you know,
fishing, football, family, or probably should say family, fishing, football, you know, in terms of priorities, if my kids do listen to this, I did mess up and I should have listed you first. And I do apologize for that. You know, my
F's just got in the way.
Yeah,
my football family.
My daughter would probably correct me on that. So
she
keeps me on my toes.
All right. Well, again, we talked a lot about the Safety Council annual, the NDSC's 50th annual Safety and Health Conference. It's February 21st through the 24th. There's still lots of time to register. There's great classes. There's nothing that I think has been filled up. I looked at the class schedule yesterday, and man, there's a lot of 20 to 30 to 40. A few of them have over 100. So it's just some amazing classes, and I'm so proud of that. So please go to our website, ndsc.org. That's ndsc.org. We'd love to see you there. It's going to be a great networking opportunity. We got some great sponsors of our event, including Workforce Safety, who's our biggest premier sponsors, Mobile Pro, Hess Corp, Roco Rescue, Safe Start, One Oak. Let me say all these.
Yep, you have to say
Alliance Safety Council, American Crystal Sugar, Basin Electric, Bismarck Mandan CVB, Bobcat Company, CHI St. Alexis, CP Police Services, Continental Resources, CS Welding, Dakota Medical Foundation, Enbridge, Enerplus, Marathon Oil, Marathon Petroleum, Noble, North American Coal, that's both Coteau and Falkirk Mines, the MDU Resources groups of all their crew of Knife River, Great Plains Natural Gas, MDU Utilities, MDU Construction, and WBI Energy, all of those sponsors.
Yep. We couldn't do it without them, right?
And what's amazing is
it's amazing.
We have I don't know how many sponsors we have.
Oh, gosh.
Like 176 or 200, maybe it's over 200.
It's right about there, yep.
What's awesome for us is it just shows those people support us, too, and obviously Workforce Safety, what you guys are doing. Is
absolutely, and as you're listing those off, I'm thinking in my mind, these are the heavy hitters.
Yeah.
I mean, these are the employers that have a tremendous number of employees throughout the state in a wide variety of industries, a lot of different duties out there. So the fact that everybody is so invested in this, whether they're in the oil and gas industry, whether they're in the manufacturing industry, whatever it might be, everybody has a part to play in this, and a tremendous amount of North Dakota families depend on these employers for keeping their loved ones safe and bringing them home every night. So awesome that you have this kind of sponsorship, and kudos to you for listing WSI as the premier and biggest sponsor and getting that first. Unlike me, I would have probably said it last. So appreciate that, Chuck. You're a true pro.
Well, we surely appreciate Workforce Safety. And it's been fun. I love doing these.
Yeah, it's great to get to know people.
Our awesome guest today is Art Thompson, another great conversation. That's all for Talk Safety to Me with the North Dakota Safety Council. We'll have more episodes dropping soon. So stay connected, and more importantly, stay safe out there.
Thanks for listening to Talk Safety to Me, a podcast for the North Dakota Safety Council recorded at the Radio Access Studio in Bismarck, North Dakota. Find our podcast, safety training options, information about our annual conference, and more at ndsc.org. You also can listen to Talk Safety to Me on 102.5 FM and online at radioaccess.org.